Oh man, it's a good couple weeks to be a Cougar fan. I'll tell you what, going to Tennessee, beating them there, and then having that win over USC in dramatic fashion in overtime again for a second week in a row. It's just awesome. It just feels good, and love it. Just absolutely love it being a Cougar fan.
Yeah, that was exciting. That was fun, and I want to say that I'm incredibly shocked, but I'm a little surprised they pulled it out again.
Really, I'm with you. If you remember, we were talking about it. I think my prediction was that USC would have us at the end, and my hope was that we just keep it close. And I think it just goes back to our text a little bit during the middle of the game. At halftime, you texted and said, "What do you think?" I said, "Man, if we can just keep the ball in front of us, and then have the ball at the very end of the game, if we have the ball last, we'll win." And sure enough, what is it? What does it come down to? It comes down to us getting that ball last in the end. It was just incredible and good team effort.
Agreed. As I watched that game, the more I sat and watched, the more I thought, man, they're going to pull this off. Until at the very end, they just
It just seemed as the game progressed more and more, USC seemed to get more and more tired, making just a few mental errors here and there. And it just seemed like that momentum kept away, and they just had that edge going into overtime. It felt like.
See, I thought about halfway through the first quarter, going through the second quarter, I thought maybe USC had weathered the storm and USC came out, or BYU came out really pumped and USC had weathered it and USC's athletes were going to take over, but that never happened. I think BYU felt comfortable the whole entire game
Agreed.
and
Agreed.
kept
And
USC uncomfortable.
I think that a huge part of that was the game plan put together by the coaching staff. We talked about it earlier this season. BYU might not always have the best athletes stride for stride with somebody, but well coached and pretty well disciplined this week put a W on the board, and it was awesome to see.
Yeah, I don't know. I think maybe we'll get into it more later about as far as actual game plan goes. But I was shocked that BYU just kept dropping eight, and USC decided to keep throwing the football. I figured at some point they'd start handing that back a little more. They just kept trying to throw into tight windows time after
And it
time.
seemed like they would at first. So early in the downs, they would hand it off, get a good chunk of yards, and then second, third down, they'd throw it, and then all of a sudden they're stuck. They're like, okay, now we're third and middle range, 5 yards or so. What do we do? And it just kind of put them in a tough spot over and over again.
Well, yeah, and BYU stuck to their game plan. They said, we're going to drop eight. We're going to continue to make life difficult on the pass game, and we're going to dare you to throw or dare you to run. And it ended up working out. USC kept throwing the ball and not running it when BYU
And
was giving it to
you
them.
know, credit to, like we said, the game plan, keeping everything in front of them, because those wide receivers were legit. They looked the part, they ran the part, they were very impressive. But like you said, dropping eight and keeping those windows moving in front of a young quarterback, those windows were closing and opening so fast. And I think his internal clock was a little off. I think he at times may have had more time than he realized and was trying to force throws into windows that weren't there or were really, really tight.
Yeah, I mentioned it a little last week that I think as soon as they get a little film out on him, you might see a game plan put together to slow him down a little bit. I think BYU did a really good job of watching film and seeing which throws he can make and which throws he might force, and dared him to make the really, really tough throws. And if you have to live with making really tough throws
Right
over and
on,
over again,
right
you're going to
on.
end up paying for it.
And we'll probably talk more about it, but it might give a game plan to Utah coming up next week, USC. And
For
you
sure,
guys get
for
them at
sure.
home,
Yeah.
correct? Going to Southern Cal.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh no, we're going to
My
Southern Cal.
apologies. You had them
Yeah.
last year, right? Okay, perfect. That's what it was.
Yeah, we beat Oklahoma.
Just a couple stats before we switch gears over to the Utah side of things. Zach Wilson finished the game with 20 of 33, 280 yards with one touchdown, and about half a million yards in scrambling. But a total of 10 yards rushing for Zach Wilson, but I think he ran probably 300 yards side to side.
Yeah, he did a better job in that one, I think, of keeping keeping plays alive and using that creativity he has.
And that's something I want to talk about here in a segment or two, was the offensive game plan of keeping him loose. But a couple more stats real quick. Tyson Williams, 19 carries, 99 yards, averaging 5.2 yards per carry. And that just makes you think, just keep handing that guy the rock if he's going to get you 5 yards per touch.
Yeah, I thought BYU's offensive line did a pretty good job of giving him holes to run through, and he took advantage. And I think they actually did a really good job of mixing up the throw and the run, just to keep him fresh and to keep people out of the box. They did a good job mixing it up.
And some of the creativity as well, throwing in some of those trick plays or fake trick plays and what have you, to just keep everything honest, keep it a little loose.
Yeah. Lots of trick plays that look the same as another play, like the fake reverse they had that busted him open for a little bit, and then actually doing the reverse on the next one, just kind of mixing it up.
Now on the Utah side, speaking of boring, no, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. 31-0.
It was
over Idaho State, traveling about 3.5 hours from Southern Idaho down to Utah to see them in Rice Eccles. Andrew, how did your Utes look for you?
First half was really, really good. Second half was a little slow, but that's mostly twos and threes at that point, so I'll live with it. Tyler Hunley, 15 of 19, 282 and 3 touchdowns. Zach Moss had a very quick day. I think he was done halfway through the second, but 10 carries, 106 yards.
And he continues to impress. I know it's an Idaho State team, but he is always impressive. Yeah,
he did what he wanted in that one.
Perfect.
He got out.
Get too
stayed healthy.
With that. There's a fine line between padding the stats and running the risk of hurting someone like that.
Yeah, all I gotta say is I'm ready for a real game this week. I'm excited for a game that I'm excited to watch, that I'm not just watching to see, you know, how much we win by, will we look good doing it. I'm excited to see that there'll be a game that
totally agree.
It matters.
And you know, I know BYU beat them. It was a close game. The game before, they trounced down Stanford. I still don't want to put USC down yet. I still think it could be a formidable threat that Utah's got to take serious going into week 3.
Yeah, I'll talk more about it as we get going, but this is... I don't think it's a gimme by any stretch.
When I say week 3, I mean week 4. Sorry.
I got what you're saying. Yeah, I knew what you mean.
Well, you ready for segment 1? All right, brother. As always, let's put some red and blue goggles on.
Okay, well, got them on.
Let's have you
want to go first?
You
want me to go first?
Questions lined out for you. So, goggles on, goggles off.
Okay.
Did the Idaho State game accomplish what they needed for this past week?
I guess not a lot to accomplish in that game, but I'll say yes. One, nobody got hurt. And two, we've still shown about 10 plays on offense. So I guess we haven't given away too much of the playbook before we head to USC. So I guess we'll count those two things as success.
That's kind of a game that you would almost hope to see week 1. It's to some degree, it's a little unfortunate that it's BYU Utah the first week. I'd almost like to see that week even 2 or 3, but still, it's a nice way to kind of warm up to Pac-12.
Yeah, I enjoy the BYU game, and I would prefer we just have one of the Northern Illinois Idaho State teams. I'd prefer to put somebody else here in one of those spots, a little more competitive game. But I understand what they're doing, and I understand, you know, in the long run, nobody's getting penalized for these cupcake games, so you make sure you don't lose one.
That's true. You look out at conference Alabama, play, and you keep going. Georgia, some of these really big name teams, they're playing cupcakes as well, you know, and they're not obviously getting penalized for it. They're typically automatics getting into the top four.
Yeah, that's true, and it's not as fun as a fan to watch Utah beat the pants off of Idaho State. I'd prefer we have a more competitive game week three to get ready for USC, but I understand.
So what if why they schedule the way they schedule? Schedule a say SEC team, mid-tier one, to come in.
I think we just booked some with Arkansas, so that's in the book. That's coming up. I'm not sure how far out. It's not in the next couple of years, but we put one with Arkansas. I think we have Baylor coming up, a couple other ones. And I hope, and I don't know, I'm in the minority of loud Ute fans at least. I hope they keep BYU on the schedule and add another Power 5 team, and then we can put another cupcake in there if you want to play Idaho State or Idaho or whatever.
Yeah. It would be interesting to see, you said it was Arkansas? So, because
Arkansas, it depends on the year.
Sometimes they can give Georgia and those guys a run for their money. They just kind of give them a fit when they play in. Be interesting to see what kind of Arkansas.
Yeah, they're pretty pretty hit and miss. I'm looking it up right now. I think they announced it's 2026. I think we go to 2026. We go to Arkansas. 2028 they come back. So it's not anytime soon. But it's exciting to see teams like that on the schedule.
So here's another question for you. We've got your red goggles on still. Okay, so
still got them on.
Red tint. What does that USC loss to BYU mean for Utah?
Mostly negative with red goggles on. One, because it takes a little bit of the pizzazz and the excitement out of this week's Utah-USC game. I think if USC goes in there and beats BYU, they're top 20 undefeated. Two undefeated top 20 Pac-12 teams playing in USC. I think the fact that they lost, they probably fall out of the rankings if they haven't already. And now you're looking at how good are they actually. I think we're the Fox main game on Friday night, so that's still exciting, but I wish there was a little more excitement as far as two undefeated teams go. So that hurts. And it also, like I mentioned in the previous podcast, anytime USC is not good, it hurts the Pac-12. So USC losing already is a notch down for the Pac-12.
Exactly. Now, humor me, put a blue goggle on that. What does that mean? Right.
For Utah?
For Utah. For BYU. If you were looking at it and saying, like, hey, I'm still looking at it through like a BYU lens, what does that mean for Utah? Doesn't it still give them some clout?
Yeah, I think the positive for Utah there is if BYU ends up going 9-3 or 10-2 or, I don't know, 11-1, and with a win over USC, that helps Utah's schedule. It makes their out-of-conference schedule look a little better. It's not a bad BYU, a bad Northern Illinois, and a bad Idaho State, that's for sure.
Hey, also, just to answer your question as far as them falling out of the top 25, they did. So your Pac-12 top 25, you're looking at Arizona State, Cal, Washington, and Washington State. And then obviously Oregon.
Utah and Oregon. 10.
So obviously Utah is still on the up and up, even with a cupcake of a team coming in. I think you went from 11 to 10, right?
Yeah, I think maybe Florida fell behind us or someone fell back. I don't think anybody lost, but Florida, obviously we saw them. They didn't look that impressive. So I think they might have fallen back. I'm not sure. Gotcha. I don't think anybody lost in front of us, though.
And that'll help going to play teams like a USC to help a team like Utah move up the ranks a little quicker.
Yeah, I think well, it's going to be tough for the Pac-12 to keep all six of those teams ranked because we're going to start playing each other. But it would be nice to have Washington State still undefeated in a couple weeks when they come to Salt Lake. It'd be nice to have Cal State somewhat good. We got Washington coming up later, so it'd be nice at least to have a couple of those guys stay competitive to help Utah strengthen the schedule. And then
I would imagine that as long as, you know, obviously with the red goggles on, you want Utah to win, but as long as they're close, showing that they're competitive, it's not just like one team blowing out the other, that I think would help both teams, I'd imagine, stay ranked and move up the rankings together.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind blowing out USC, right. But I get what you're saying. Yeah.
All right, so go ahead, bud.
Okay, let's slide those blue goggles on, Chase.
Always ready.
Okay, how big of a win was this for BYU?
It was a good win. You know, a lot of people in the BYU world talk about the independence era, and you've kind of got that pre-independence era and independence era. I would put this in the top, I'd say number three. I would say probably number three for the biggest wins in the independence era.
Interesting. Why three?
I think the Wisconsin's got to be number one. I mean, they're ranked number five in the nation, on the road, prime time, and they were not supposed to be anywhere close, and they pulled it off, and they did it. So, I mean, that's obviously got to be number one. And then number two, I'm a little biased because I was at the game, but that Boise State game the very next week after the Nebraska Hail Mary with Magnum and Mitch Matthews. So those have got to be, I think, ahead of that. And there's been a lot of talk, too, as far as BYU's having a really hard time pulling off big wins against really competitive people at home. They seem to be okay going out and being competitive on the road. So it was huge to have the fan base in their home stadium be involved and be able to actively participate in this win. So I think that puts it up there pretty high.
Let me play devil's advocate for a second. I would go out on a limb and say this might be the biggest win in the independence era because of what it means going forward or what it means after last week. Of course, and I don't know, that Wisconsin team, he ended up beating them, and that was number five. And I think they came down to earth after that. So they were number five at that point. I think this is bigger because it showed some consistency. You went to Knoxville last week and won, and then you didn't come down back and fall on your face. After the Wisconsin win, you had some losses you shouldn't have had. I think that this shows that there might be some steps in the right direction, that we went and won at Tennessee and we came home and took care of business and beat a top 25
kind of goes back to that, our podcast last week. My final rant was, how quickly can we come off the high? How quickly can we come back to some kind of a calm so that we can refocus and beat USC, or at least compete with the USC? And so, I see what you mean for sure. And I don't feel like there was a ton of heat on Kalani's coaching seat, but if there was any, this definitely takes any heat off him.
And I know you have to live in the moment and look at a game as a game, but I think this win turns bigger depending on what happens in the next couple of weeks. Obviously, you go lose to Washington, it doesn't destroy this. But say you lose to Washington, you went 2-2 through this schedule, and all of a sudden you go roll through the rest of the season and you're 10-2. I think you look back to that at that USC win and it shows consistency and it shows improvement and it shows
might be that you're going somewhere to get everything rolling, just to excite everybody. Yeah, I see what you mean.
I agree.
And blue goggles on, it'll take some time to really tell. but the fact that it was prime time on a Saturday where there was really not a lot of other games to watch, so I think a lot of other people that aren't necessarily BYU or USC fans tuned in and watched, we might see some dividends of that, of maybe some other grad transfers seeing Tyson Williams and be like, oh, BYU plays some big names and gets good TV time. I'm playing number two fiddle to so-and-so. Maybe I should be looking at BYU. And you just never know. You never know, but it could be a big thing.
Yeah, agreed. I'm, let's just say I'm way higher as far as how big of a win this was on this week's game than I was on last week's.
I think that Tennessee is much more of a down team than USC is.
Yeah, and I guess the college football, we'll see how that goes the rest of the way. But
that's
the
beauty of college football, maybe. So, one last question before we move on. You know what? With the big win against USC, and then just kind of Utah lining themselves up for their gauntlet through the Pac-12, what's the expectation after the first 3 weeks for the Utes?
Man, red goggles on. I'm not sure they've changed, and they might be higher than they were before the season started. I don't think the Pac-12 shown that it has a juggernaut. I don't think the rest of Utah's schedule shows that they should be afraid of any of those teams. I'm not predicting that Utah goes 11-0 or 12-0 or whatever it is the rest of the year, but I think that that's not a far-fetched expectation for a team that's full of seniors and a top 10 team in the rankings right now.
If you're all right, I'm going to say on the BYU side, I'll put my blue goggles on. You know,
do it.
If I'm fanatic, crazy, unrealistic, you know, blue run through my veins moment, you know, 10-2 sounds amazing. I would love to see another 10 win year like we did early on with Bronco and back in the day. But I think realistically, you know, it's a very, very good UW team that we're going to be facing this coming week. And then after that, you know, I just hope we don't have a sleeper against Toledo, because I think Toledo is actually a pretty damn good team. So I'm going to say after this Washington game, win or lose, I think we lose two other games is kind of my guess.
Whoa, two whole. So I'm not picking you to beat Washington. So you think you lose two more after that?
Yeah, so I'm thinking 8-4. 8-4. My two, I think we maybe get bit by sleepers, just kind of seems to happen, unfortunately, you know, with BYU. And then either Boise, I think we get Boise or Utah State. We get one of the two.
Chase, you got to check those blue goggles. You're not sounding very blue.
You're more blue
right
than
now.
I am. You're going 10-2. Let's stick with that. You got to give me my blue goggles back.
Hey, I thought that's where we were going. I was trying to talk you up here. I thought I set you up for an 11-1 guess.
Heck yeah, man. We're gonna go steamroll Washington, Toledo. Who the heck's Toledo? We're rolling, baby.
I get what you're saying. BYU has had in the past issues winning some games that they should win.
And
I guess we'll see as the season goes along. But I think that USC win was big.
And obviously, I mean, do I want them to do that? Do I want them to have a sleeper game that they lose? Heck no. Like you said, 10-2, 11-1. Oh yeah, that'd be sweet. Top 20 team. Oh yeah. But I wouldn't blame this team whatsoever if, you know, they win, you know, two out of the first four, which is a crazy gauntlet in my opinion, and then say they win the next few, to have a sleeper, because the emotions and just the sheer stress of having those kinds of teams all in a row, like, I just, it wouldn't surprise me, I guess is what I'm getting at. So
I got you.
All these BYU fans are probably going to tweet at me and be like, talking about 10-2, baby. 10-2.
Hey, so this isn't on the scheduled talk about list, but I saw a BYU tweet the other day that I have to discuss before we move on. Goggles off. I saw a tweet that made its way around Utah Twitter, obviously.
Which means I saw it. It's probably one of those far-fetched ones that the Utah Twitter world. Yeah.
Of course. Okay. Of course.
I'm curious to know which one.
Of course. Yes. Of course. And the tweet says, BYU is the best team in the state of Utah, hands down, and it's not close. And Utah fans continued to tweet at him and said, hey, we played 2 weeks ago. The score was 30-12. And his response was, if we played you next week, we'd beat you by 2 scores. Now, I need you to talk me off that's not all BYU fans,
well,
Chase.
Well, why not? Why not? Any given Sunday. I don't know. It's Twitter. It's fake news. Just ask our president. I don't put a ton of stock in Twitter. It's more entertainment than anything. But, you know, it's... I said it, I think it was last week, maybe it was 2 weeks ago's episode. I know Utah has won in the last 9, and rightfully so, you know, so not take away anything there, but I, you just never know. It's just been so close. You know, if a field goal didn't ping off the post, what, 3 times in a row, if there's a lot of ifs, if, so I don't know, just to say that 2 weeks from now, if we played you again, we'd win. It's like, who knows?
Okay, well, then, who's the best team in the state of Utah right now?
Well, that's the other thing. I was talking to a BYU fan. That's, I think what I would consider most BYU fans, that when you're talking to your Ute friends and they say something and they beat you 9 times in a row, you really don't have many things to stand on. You know, you can talk about the 90s and 80s, you can talk about the early 2000s, you can talk about how they throw beer at us, but really there's not a lot to stand on.
Okay, I appreciate the perspective. Thanks for talking out the cliff.
All right, buddy.
Yeah, that works.
Well, maybe before we have too much fun on that one, let's move on to segment 2. All right,
I'm in, let's go.
Segment 2, game highlights. So we're going to talk about 2 things. We're going to talk about plays of the games and players of the games. So maybe I'll start on the BYU side. Players of the game. Man, there was just a lot of individual effort plays, I felt like, this game. It was really exciting to see. It was fun to watch. And I've got to give my... If I had to pick one, my player of the game has got to go out to Tonga, who is holding down the middle of the defensive line, only rushing 3 almost the entire game. He was super impressive. I don't know if you noticed, but there were times where they were not just doubling, but they were triple teaming him. And he was just a monster blowing through there. Obviously, the BYU fans love the video of the quarterback after Tonga sacked him, and he gets up and he doesn't seem to know where he's at.
Shut the shoe
again. No,
is that you're talking Tennessee. About?
That was
okay.
Dog.
That's true.
That was Dog
okay.
Against Tennessee. That was hilarious, though. Somebody interviewed him about that, and like, what were you thinking? He's like, honestly, I have no idea. I watched that video and I'm embarrassed, but it's hilarious. Now that we know he didn't get a flag for it. If he got a flag, it'd be a different thing. Oh man, but no, Tonga's just this massive, massive man. If you haven't had a chance to see some of the highlights, go look at the defensive nose tackle. He just ate it up in the middle. I believe he had, I think it was 4 tackles, a batted down ball, several for a loss, and like I said, I think. The reason that Fanua and some of the others had many more tackles than he did was because he was demanding a double, a triple team, or a running back glancing him off of you know, coming off of his fake and then going out into the route, he had to glance off of him, and he was just causing so much trouble for their offensive line.
Yeah, I think that was, and I think I sent you a text about it. I think that was the thing that shocked me most about that game, was BYU's ability to get pretty consistent pressure rushing three down linemen. And I feel like they did it all game long, and he was and a big part
of it. USC had cupcakes for linemen up front. They were just doing a good job. They were being sound. They were fundamental. And I do feel like their motor was a little stronger, especially near the end of the game. So, yeah. What was the players for the Utah Utes?
My player of the game, hard to do in a game like that, but I'll go Devin Lloyd, just because of the expectations of the linebacking core coming into the season was a little worrisome. But they've shown nothing but great things so far. He led the team in tackles, 9 tackles. 3 solo tackles, 3.5 tackles for a loss, and that included a sack. So he was real active, got in the backfield, made a bunch of tackles, was all over the field. So I'm excited to see those two linebackers against some Pac-12 foes here. So they've shown that they can stand up against these guys. I'm excited to see what they can do against some better competition.
And on the podcast side of things, I'm really excited to kind of get into the Pac-12 side of things, give us a little more content on the Utah side for sure. So
for sure,
flipping gears just a hair, we talked about players of the game. What about plays of the game for the Utes?
Just because it was a really long chunk play that Utah doesn't get very often, I'll go Tyler Hunley's 82-yard touchdown pass to Brian Thompson. I mentioned earlier that I still think we've seen about 10 plays from the Utah playbook. It was a pretty basic play action up the middle, basically just a streak down the left side, beat his man, beat the safety, and Hunley put it right on him for an 82-yard touchdown. So Utah's offense does things like that. It makes them pretty tough to beat.
Think they'll ever see a pass that long against a Pac-12 team?
I hope so. I'm hoping. I don't know. 82 yards is long. I think someone said that's the 6th longest pass in school history. So 82 is a lot, but I wouldn't mind seeing those 40, 50, 60 yards.
Yeah, that's kind of
what I was thinking.
It's like those 40 yards long.
I'm hoping so. We'll see. We'll see how real I'm being as far as opening the playbook goes this next week, because we've got nothing to hold back for at this point.
That'd be pretty scary if that was the whole playbook.
just some runs up the middle and some play action boots. It's about all we've seen. So we'll see.
So I think on the BYU side, there's 5 that I just want to mention. I'll be really quick about them, but I think that Peyton Wilgar interception at the beginning of the game, the first interception where he just laid out like a wide receiver would for the interception, I think that just kind of got that spark for the entire team. Even though it was on the defensive side of things, I felt like that kind of got the offense going and woke them up.
But that set them up for their first touchdown, right? Because that was deep inside. I think that
it was just barely inside the 30. I think it was like the 29, 28-yard line. So,
great play. That was a great snag for a linebacker.
And it just kind of, I think, gave the fans a little bit of hope of like, ooh, these guys really want seeing a linebacker lay out like that. Obviously, the next interception was the Isaiah Kafusi. Like we had talked about, BYU had the great game plan, in my opinion, of they're going to be a little faster than us, or not a little, they're faster, period, than us with their wide receiver core. Let's drop 8. Let's keep those windows moving so he doesn't necessarily see some of these guys crossing. And I was watching, and there were several times where wide receivers do crossing routes. The linebackers were doing the exact same thing. They were actually crossing each other so that the windows looked different for the young quarterback. So Isaiah Kafusi did a great job kind of working the middle of the field, coming across, getting that interception. The Dax Milne touchdown, that was something you and I had actually discussed when it came to this wide receiver against the Utah Utes. The wide receivers aren't necessarily going to be the biggest, fastest on especially against some of these DBs. But the thing that they have to do, which BYU has been known for in the past for the wide receivers, is just making those hard catches. Do you know which touchdown I'm talking about in the corner?
Yeah.
I mean, the DB was right there. He was in his hip pocket doing what he's supposed to, and he just went up and made a great grab. And there was a couple of those. Do you remember the one where I think it was Daw? If I remember, no, it wasn't Daw. Gunner Romney, it just looked really awkward. He had his leg behind him, was kind of folded up weird, but he just reached down with one hand and kind of scooped the ball up towards him and caught it.
Yeah, kind of traps it against himself and tries to not tear his ACL falling back with his leg underneath.
But that was pretty cool. And just the will to win a little bit. But and then the last one I got to mention is there's several times Zach Wilson having just a blast. He was having so much fun out there scrambling. And I don't know how he did it, but there was one time they were heading towards the north end zone, and there was a guy coming, and he should have just been blindsided. And I don't know how he felt him or heard him or something coming, and he just spun around, avoided the sack, got the first down. And then obviously the one right near the end of the game where he scrambled, saw the two guys coming from both sides and went straight up the middle and threw, I think, like a 35-yard, 40-yard pass to set up his own run for the touchdown.
Yeah, that was a big one, that last one there, just to keep the play alive and get up that big chunk.
And I got to give a little shout-out to the wide receiver, too, for holding onto the ball. He got slacked at the end of that play.
Yeah, I think one thing we talked about a couple weeks ago was that BYU's receivers needed to give Bushman a break, have some other people that can make plays, and I think they've done that the last couple weeks.
Yeah, and I'm not too worried about Bushman's numbers. I mean, as we get through this gauntlet of hard teams that are focusing more and more on him, he'll get his stats and he'll get his chance to be looked at by NFL scouts and what have you. It's nice right now to see these receivers take some heat off him.
For sure.
Okay. Well, ready to mix it up a little bit, talk about something besides the Houston Cougs for a sec?
Yeah, let's do it. Segment 3, Games Around the Nation.
All right.
Which ones were you watching, Chase?
I ended up watching the Washington State-Houston game for quite a bit of it. I was intrigued. You know, for a while there, it had me nervous. Houston was hanging with them. And it seemed like Washington was playing maybe a little tight until near the end. You could see them kind of loosen up, and they started to have some fun. And that air raid that Leach is known for took off, and it was just kind of fun to watch after that. But that was a good one. It's one of those things that Houston, you know, after a couple losses, it's one of those things about college ball, a couple of fumbles a different direction, a couple of penalties a different direction, and who knows, they might be 2-1 instead of 1-2.
Yeah, I think they're 1-2 now, but their two losses are to Oklahoma and a top 20 Washington State team. So they can't really hang their head. You got to pick it up and get going for the rest of the year. But I think the funnest part of that game was listening to the conversations as far as Leach and his air raid and his disciples, and that Houston's Holgorsen was one of his disciples, and how they kind of view the air raid differently. And you kind of saw it in their game plans that Houston was willing to take the run when given to them. And it's just interesting to see how they came from the same system, but they've kind of done it their own way.
Exactly. And it cracks me up that they're calling them disciples of Leach.
Yeah,
a little sacrilegious, sure, but still funny. What about you? What was one you watched?
Again, I'm doing it through a Utah perspective. I was hoping Stanford would make a better showing than they did against UCF, but that was not competitive from almost the get-go.
Yeah, it didn't look good. Well, we can leave it at that if you want. Don't want to rub it in too much.
Yeah. Yeah, but Arizona State pulled off an ugly one against Michigan State.
I didn't get a chance to watch the end of that. How did that go?
It was one of the weirdest endings I've ever seen, just because Arizona State goes down and scores a touchdown. First touchdown they scored all game to make it 10-7. And then Michigan State moves down the field. They get a pretty friendly pass interference call to get them in field goal range. And they kick the game-tying field goal and make it. But then they go back and review, and Michigan State had 12 players on the field during the field goal. Somehow the refs didn't see it. And they had to throw a flag retroactively, move him back, and have him kick it again. And he misses, so Arizona State wins. And that's technically the end of it, because Arizona State wins. But the Pac-12 has since released a statement saying, during the missed field goal, Arizona State committed a penalty when one of their players jumped over the line of scrimmage, which is illegal. So technically, Michigan State should have gotten 15 yards and the field goal kicked again. But it didn't happen, so Arizona State
wins. Kind of an interesting thing. If I can get sidetracked for a second, it's becoming more and more a trend for coaches and conferences and teams, universities, to make like written statements after a game about something. I know even on the BYU site, Kalani had made mention in passing. I think maybe it was the Utah game, and again, I don't think anybody's blaming anything on the refs as far as losing or whatever, but just making these like written statements about how the refs called the game or what call should have been done. Is that just me, or does that just seem like kind of mute point to do that?
Yeah, it doesn't help anybody, I guess, but you can't, if you're like, I don't know, in this case, if you're the commissioner of the Pac-12, you can't just brush it under the rug and be like, oops, it happened. I guess you have to at least address that it happened and that you noticed that it happened and you're trying to have it happen again.
That made a mistake?
Yeah, it was Pac, I think it was Pac-12 refs at Michigan
State. So that makes a little more sense. So they're in charge of those refs.
Yeah.
Okay. That makes a lot more sense. But still, even then, it's interesting that it's just becoming this trend of people making statements after the game. It's Keiko. Okay, good to know.
And it's always tough to have those for sure bad calls right at the end of the game that makes you feel like it cost you a game, but you can go back to play after play, and it's just, I don't know, it's silly, but I guess it's the day we live in.
Exactly, and I've always been of the mindset that the refs are humans as well, and it's part of the element of the game of humans making decisions on the fly, and they're at the collegiate level, meaning that they're better than the high school, just like an athlete would be. And so it's just part of the game. I mean, you might get some homer calls. There might be times where they hold on to the flag on a close call that they can't decide on. But at the end of the day, you can't sit there and argue with them for 20 seconds of your, you know, 40-second clock every time. So
it makes you feel better after a loss, but that's just basically about it.
Like I said, if it comes at a crucial moment that could help you win, I get it, but like you said, you gotta look further back in the game. But let's see, how about Kentucky? What do you think of the Kentucky game?
I think they just choked it. I think that was their football game, and they were the better team, and just, man, I'm still not sure how Florida won that one, but they did.
Oh man, it's just kind of crazy.
I did you see the Florida quarterback's injury? I feel bad for him.
I heard about it. I didn't see it. It was pretty bad.
No, it's one of those ones when you're on Twitter where somebody says, if you haven't seen it yet, don't go watch it. Those are the ones I'm like, I'm going to steer clear of those. But it sounded like it was a dislocated ankle.
Yeah, those are so gross. I remember I was watching the South Carolina game live. It was probably like 2008 or 9 or so. And the running back for South Carolina, who was actually having a really great season, busted his leg. And he kind of got rolled up on it, snapped. You could kind of tell something was wrong, but then all of a sudden he's sitting in a lane there and he lifts his leg up and it flops over and you're just like, oh.
That was Marcus Lattimore, I think. Marcus Lattimore. Yeah, and he was legit.
And I know he was having a heck of a season, and that's why everyone was watching and have that happen. Oh, that was, I avoid that. That is just like right up there with the was it the Final Four?
The guy's Louisville leg snapped.
That's bad.
Yeah. Yeah, if I see one of those warnings on Twitter, I try to steer clear of anything that has to do with that for the next little while.
See, that's why we didn't go into the medical field. Well, hey, just some other numbers. Obviously, Clemson destroyed Syracuse, Alabama. Put up some good numbers against South Carolina, beating them. Georgia threw a shutout to Arkansas State. LSU destroyed Northwestern. UCLA, I don't know if that coach there is going to have a job for much longer.
They're bad. They're bad, Chase. They're bad. I don't know what to say about that.
Yeah. It's like, if they were just not talented, that's one thing, but they're not disciplined. They don't. Yeah, it's just, you're right. It's pretty rough. Notre Dame destroyed New Mexico. Ohio destroyed Indiana. Auburn over Kent. Like we talked about, Florida over Kentucky. Utah. Texas beat Rice. Penn State over Pittsburgh in a close one. There was one more. Oh, there it is. Iowa State. That was the other one. Did you happen to see any of that?
I stopped watching because it kept going to weather delays, and I saw the highlights and I saw the end of it, but I didn't watch much of it live.
Yeah, it was kind of funky that way. There's been a few of those the last few weeks, but it ended up being a really close game, which is kind of fun for that rivalry. They're one of those two that just kind of can't stand each other, and I guess I can sympathize a little bit with Iowa State. They've lost to Iowa many, many times, but in many, many close ones as well. So I can sympathize with
them. I know you already mentioned the game, but I feel like the feel-good story of the week was the Georgia-Arkansas State. Did you see the fans and the coach on that one?
Yeah, that was a really, really good story. Did you want to tell it?
Yeah, it's just real quick that I guess Arkansas State's head coach, his wife had died of breast cancer a couple months before the season started, and Georgia's fans did a breast cancer awareness day at the stadium for his wife, and they all wore pink and they kind of honored her. So that was kind of cool right before they obliterated this football team, but it was kind of cool to see a team doing that for another team's coach.
It brings that human element into it, and big props to the student section for recognizing what's going on in, someone's life and respecting that.
Yeah, bigger than football for sure.
Maryland, that one surprised me, honestly. Maryland loses to Temple. Maybe it was a sleeper for him. I don't know.
I saw a statistic on Maryland right before the game started that spelled bad for them, I guess. The last four or five times they've gotten into the rankings, they've immediately lost the next game. So that trend continues.
I was kind of hopeful. It'd be kind of neat to see Maryland do well, but here we go. Probably won't hear of them for a while. Washington over Hawaii. Yeah. A small part of me was kind of hoping Hawaii would keep it really close just to kind of be fun where they've beat two Pac-12 teams, but realistically they're bottom tier Pac-12 teams that they beat.
Hey, I'm just happy Hawaii's not undefeated against Pac-12 anymore. We can get rid of that.
And then last but not least, Virginia. Man, they had to come from behind. It was a really, really close, tight one. Florida State, I was wrong last week. Florida State came to Virginia, and Virginia had to kind of pull it off at the end.
Yeah, I'm not sure Virginia deserved to win that one, but they did, and they're undefeated still, and they move on to the next one. But that was a little slow and hard to watch at times, but I'm glad Bronco got the win.
Now, hopefully that was their sleeper, and hopefully they can move on and see what they can do throughout the rest of the ACC.
Maybe go get close in the game, but probably not.
You can always wish, right? All right. So that's it for games around the nation. Let's do our next segment.
Okay.
Segment 4, keys to this week's games. So, like we said, Utah has actually got a pretty decent game ahead of them instead of the likes of Idaho State. What are some keys for Utah in this coming game against USC?
I think I'm going to go number one is the turnover battle. I think that's the biggest one. I think it was the biggest one in the BYU-USC game, and I think Utah is going to need to force a couple turnovers. I think if they force a couple turnovers and they don't turn it over themselves, they win that game, and I'm pretty positive of it. I think the other key, and we saw it from BYU, which not that I don't think BYU's front is very good, but I think Utah's is better. And I hope and I think they will get lots of pressure with four down linemen. I think what that allows Utah to do, and what I think is the reason BYU won that game last week, is that kid's shown he can make throws. If you give him throws to make, he will make throws. I'm not sure he's learned how to read a defense yet. And I think BYU made him make reads and took advantage of the bad reads he made. So if Utah can drop in coverage, just send four, get some pressure on him, and make him make reads, I think Utah secondary has a field day.
Excellent. Yeah, no, I agree with you there. It'll be interesting to see what they do with four down linemen and one less person back in the secondary.
Yeah, I think Utah secondary is up for the challenge. We'll see. We're not dropping eight, obviously, and Utah's never going to drop eight. Just because of how Whittingham plays defense and his philosophy. But I want them to be able to force him to make reads and not just throws.
Right. And that's, like, to your point, that's what BYU made him do. And it, at the end of the day, it worked for him.
Yeah. I think the other one that's huge is and just from what I know about Whittingham, I'm not sure we see this, but I would like to see them come out and throw the ball to start the game. I know USC's watched Utah film, and I know what they're going to do is stack the box and stop Moss. So I would like to see them throw to get Moss rolling. I would like to see them make USC respect the passing game, so Zach has some holes to run through as the game goes along. They have to keep on.
So would you put Moss under 100 yards rushing then?
No, if Moss is under 100 yards, we lose. So I think we have to come back to that, and that's what we're going to do. Moss is the workhorse. But I would like to see them at least release the pressure on him. Both Idaho State and Northern Illinois just stacked the box and blitzed the gaps and said, beat us with the throw. And I think USC will probably do something similar. So I would like to see them have to drop back and give Zach a little more room by throwing the ball first.
Yeah, that makes sense. Especially where the USC team's going to have a lot quicker DBs than Idaho State.
Yes, than those guys, for sure.
So, yeah. Keys on BYU's side, man, it's going to be tough because I think you have to do basically what you did against USC, where you drop eight, you keep everything in front of you, you say, beat us with the run. And at the exact same time, you're going to have to be creative. So, how do you do that blend? I don't know. I feel for the coaches this week because you've kind of shown your cards a little bit on how you plan on working a team that's going to be a little better than you. It's keeping everything in front of you. We have to win the turnover battle. You know, we did it with Tennessee and we did it with USC. You win that turnover battle, it at least gives you that shot. It gives you that chance to win. And you can see the opposite, you know, with Utah. Turn it over three times, and we didn't get any turnovers coming the other direction, right? And two of them is going for touchdowns. It's going to be key. It's going to be key. You can't turn it over, and you got to get at least, I would say, at least two, whether it's fumbles or interceptions or something. But we're going to have to get a couple turnovers in order for us to beat. I think my personal opinion is a more well-rounded and a better coached UW team compared to the USC team we just faced.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing I'm looking for this week is that this team, for lack of a better word for them, I think Washington's the most Utah-esque team they faced since Utah.
And probably will the rest of the season.
And I think, because I think Washington, unlike USC, if BYU continues to drop eight, we'll continue to hand the ball to Ahmed and keep giving him the ball and feed the beast and see what happens and see if BYU will come out of it.
UW thumped him in Seattle last year. And if you remember, that was pretty much their game plan. I mean, they didn't really throw a ton, at least not well, right? But they were so well-rounded that Ahmed just beat us. It was, I felt like Ahmed and Gaskett was just, they were just killers. And if we, like you said, if we drop eight and we can't get any pressure, why not just keep running it? But that's the key, that's going to be the key, though, is get, like I said, turnovers. But two, if they do give it to Ahmed, we've got to stop them on that second down to make them decide what are you going to do on third. So every once in a while, once in a blue moon, we can actually either make a good individual effort or get lucky and stop them on third down and make a punt every once in a while.
Yeah. And I think Wilson and the offense is going to have to keep the ball on the field a little longer. Like we mentioned last week, he can't leave that BYU defense out there for as long as they did against Utah. Washington's defense is really good. I'm not sure if they're as good on offense as they have been in years past, but their defense is still stellar. So they're going to have to score some points and do that, some favors for that defense.
The sustained drives, keeping them off the field. I know BYU's defense gave them short fields to work with just where the interceptions and stuff happened. But those sustained drives are going to be so key. And they've been talking about how Tyson Williams has gotten the ball 20 touches for Tennessee and USC, whether that was handoffs or catching it out of the backfield. And it's going to be, I think it's got to be more. I think he's got to touch the ball more like 23, 24 times and get a Isupa in there and have him touch the ball three or four times in order for the time of possession game to work in our favor as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this one feels like a lower scoring affair than the 30-27. I'm feeling something 14-17, 20-17, something like that as
so final that your, is that your final answer?
If I make a prediction, BYU, Washington, I'm saying 20. I'll go 20-14, Washington.
Okay. So you got a couple field goals in there.
Yeah. What about you?
I'm going to say 13-21. So I'm going to Utah wins again. Dang it, how do they do that? Washington. I'm going to say we get a touchdown and two field goals. I think they get in the end zone three times.
Okay.
So that's my guess. We'll see how we do.
Give me your Utah prediction.
Oh man, go down to USC. I'm gonna say, I just think Utah goes and dumps them. Really, as much as that pains me to say. No, I do. I think Utah just goes and dumps them, knowing what their defensive line's capable of, and then seeing what BYU's defensive line did against their O line, and how much Tonga gave them fits. And you guys have basically three Tongas, in my opinion, across the front. So I think you guys go out there and beat I'm going to put you up in 40. Yeah.
Whew.
I'll put you up 40 and I'll give them 21.
40-21. That gives me goosebumps. That's not even timing game time yet.
I don't know what's up with my blue goggles today. They're a little foggy or something.
I'll put my red goggles back on and get a little pessimistic here. But I'll go 34-24 Utah.
A little closer.
Yeah, I think score maybe a little closer than it actually is, but yeah, 34-24 Utah. All right.
Okay, buddy. Hey, we are just about out of time. You want to do a final rant and call our night? All right.
Let's do it.
last up for us, final rants. Let's start with you, Andrew. What is your final rant for the day?
Okay, I've been saving this all day, saving this statistic, trying to get it out of my head, but Utah hasn't won in the Coliseum at USC since 1916.
Wow, I did not know that.
So my final rant is about ending a 100-year drought. The wife and the dad, my dad and Owen were at the last time Utah played at USC, and I thought we were gonna end it. We had a 2-point conversion at the end for the win, and it got knocked out at the one, and we lost by one. But I feel good about this year. I think this is the best Utah team we've had in years. I won't go far to say the best one that we've ever had, but I just feel like we're gonna go down there and take care of business. I hope it's more than 34-24, and I'm excited to finally get that 100-year monkey off our back.
1960. Is it too late to change my guess on your business?
I was saving that statistic. I wanted to say it a couple of times throughout the podcast, but I saved it.
Well done. Way to show some discipline. Wouldn't have to be proud of you. Oh man, I actually didn't know that's a long time, and I thought 9 losses was bad.
Yeah, we don't play them every year. Obviously, we haven't been in the same conference. There hasn't been a lot of games in that time, but still, that's a long time.
Well, here's to breaking a drought. All right, on my final rant for the BYU side, it's kind of similar. It parallels last week as far as coming off of highs. It's not as much of a high that I feel like we need to come off of. I just need to see what kind of condition we're in. We've had 3 very good teams in a row. We've played them, maybe with the exception of Utah, we've played them pretty well. Lots of individual efforts, not a lot of injuries, luckily, which is awesome. But I would go out to say that this UW team is going to be probably the most well-rounded team that we're going to see the rest of the way, and we're going to have to just show how conditioned we are. We're going to go show out on Saturday, and so I'm going to be there. I'm taking the wife and kids down to Provo. Going to go check it out and watch them. Hopefully we don't jinx them, but I'm really, really excited to be there and post some stuff on Instagram and Twitter, get some good content for anybody that wants to see how Provo lives it up on game day.
Well, I'm excited for you. Yeah. That's fun. I would be a liar to say that I didn't check how much USC Utah tickets were this week, but I know I probably can't make that happen.
Well, if you can, you should make that trip, buddy. Get it done. All right.
Okay. Well, thanks, Chase.
Anytime. Hey, look, I have an idea. Let's do it next week.
Hey, I think I can do that.
Yeah, but all right. Well, until next week, thanks for listening, guys.